Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Congressman Josh Riley from New York's 19th Congressional District joined Republicans and other Democrats to vote for a bill that would detain immigrants in the country illegally for nonviolent crimes like shoplifting. We'll hear from him about why he voted for it and whether or not he'll attend President-elect Trump's upcoming inauguration. Dan Hoosch from Sullivan County Government is here for our weekly Friday chat. And the 2025 Pennsylvania Farm Show is officially underway. The week-long event is the largest indoor agricultural exposition under one roof in the nation. We'll hear about the Wayne County residents who are representing their local ag community. And the Lego Show. Local Lego lovers are celebrating the popular plastic toy brick tomorrow in Sullivan County. We'll learn more. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The Los Angeles County Fire Examiner says at least 10 people have been killed in the firestorm that's engulfing parts of the L.A. region. More than 10,000 structures are lost or damaged. The Eaton Fire in the Pasadena-Altadena area remains fully uncontained. From member station KQED, Rachel Myra reports on some victims who've lost their homes.
Flaring gas lines, downed power lines, and huge tree branches littering the roads aren't enough to keep locals away from checking on their homes. But in many cases, those homes are no longer standing. That was the case for Herb Wilson, who was on vacation with his wife in Hawaii when his daughter called him Monday to tell him what was going on.
And we're just looking down the block at all the devastation, and all the houses on the block are gone, with the exception of one.
Wilson says he's made friends with many neighbors over 20 years. He says it's too soon to say whether he'll rebuild, but right now, despite the devastation, he wants to. For NPR News, I'm Rachel Myro in Altadena, California.
Meanwhile, the L.A. Unified School District is closed. Officials say in some cases, schools are damaged or destroyed. In other cases, students have lost their homes. Nick Melvoin is with the L.A. Unified School Board and represents the area where the largest blaze, the Palisades Fire, is burning. He says he is working to get students back in class.
My number one priority is getting kids in a physical location for next week, not only so they can be there and safe with their peers, with their teachers, with their principal, but so their parents, many of whom are staying with family members or in small hotel rooms, can have the kids in a safe location during the day so those parents can figure out how they're going to rebuild, where they're going to go, and how they can take care of their basic needs as well.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. President-elect Trump is appearing virtually in a New York courtroom at this hour. He's being sentenced for his convictions of falsifying business records in order to conceal an affair. The judge has said he is not inclined to impose penalties such as a fine or a jail term on Trump. Stocks opened lower this morning after a stronger-than-expected jobs report. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 590 points in early trading.
U.S. employers added more than 250,000 jobs in December, far more than forecasters had expected. The unemployment rate dipped to 4.1%, even as hundreds of thousands of new people joined the workforce. Many of the job gains last month were in sectors such as healthcare and government, which are largely insulated from the ups and downs of the economy. But more cyclical sectors like restaurants and retailers also added tens of thousands of jobs in December. Average wages were up 3.9% from a year ago, which is likely more than enough to outpace price increases. Given the ongoing strength of the job market, the Federal Reserve is likely to move cautiously in cutting interest rates. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 570 points. This is NPR. Lawyers for TikTok will argue in the Supreme Court today against a federal law banning the video-sharing app. U.S. officials say the company's Chinese parent company poses a security risk to Americans' personal data. There's a major winter storm blanketing a lot of the U.S. today. Winter storm warnings reach from Texas and Oklahoma to Virginia's Atlantic coast. Southern states are affected, too. Snow is falling across northern Georgia. Forecasters say residents should brace for a combination of snow, sleet, freezing rain, and ice. There's also a ground stop at Atlanta's airport this morning. From member station WABE in Atlanta, Lily Oppenheimer has more.
Snow is already dusting Metro Atlanta, and the roadways are getting slippery. State officials are salting those major roadways, but say people should stay off the roads. The Atlanta area is pretty much shut down, as most schools are closed and government employees are being told to stay home. Governor Brian Kemp declared a statewide emergency. Georgia Power is preparing for widespread outages, and local hospitals are canceling elective and non-urgent procedures. The extra precautions are because Atlanta is remembering Snowmageddon in 2014, a snow and ice storm that gridlocked traffic and caused widespread chaos. For NPR News, I'm Lily Oppenheimer in Atlanta.
The space company owned by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos is preparing to launch a spacecraft into orbit on Sunday. The new Glenn rocket is wider than the rockets built by rival SpaceX. These could help bigger payloads get into orbit. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Your Part-Time Controller, the nonprofit accounting specialists, providing financial management services to support stronger nonprofits who make the world a better place. Learn more at yptc.com/NPR. Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. New Congressman Josh Riley of New York's 19th District was just sworn in last Friday after defeating one-term Republican Mark Molinaro in November. Riley spoke Thursday with Ian Pickus on WAMC's Congressional Corner about his recent vote with the GOP and other Democrats on a bill that would detain immigrants in the country illegally for nonviolent crimes like shoplifting, whether or not he will attend President-elect Trump's second inauguration, and which committees he hopes to serve on. Here's that conversation from WAMC's Ian Pickus with the New York Public News Network.
So this is our first time talking since the election, and for the second straight time, it was pretty close, but this time you defeated Mark Molinaro. What do you think made the difference this time?
Well, first of all, I'm just so honored and humbled to have been elected and to have the opportunity to do work on behalf of upstate New York. I think, you know, it was a hard-fought election. At the end of the day, I think voters are looking for real solutions to strengthen the middle class and secure the border, make sure women have the right to make their own healthcare decisions. Those are the things we focused our campaign on. And I spent a lot of time as a Democrat in the reddest parts of our district. I tried to show up everywhere possible, and you know, I would always seek out folks in red MAGA hats and introduce myself as a Democrat who comes from a Republican family and frankly thinks all of the politicians in both political parties are kind of screwing up a bit too much. And so I think a lot of those conversations were really helpful, and really just honored to have won.
How will you make sure you don't fall into that trap you've identified?
Yeah, I mean, part of it, I think, is just having lots of conversations with my constituents. I mean, just in this last week here, I've got a bunch of my friends from high school. We've been staying in touch with each other on the same chat for the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. And I just check in with them. It's Democrats, it's Republicans, it's independents, and say, hey, what's common sense on this issue? I think those are the types of conversations most upstate New Yorkers have every day when they're at the kitchen table. We don't really look at things in terms of whether it's a Democratic bill or a Republican bill. We look at it and say, is that common sense? Is that going to help upstate New York? If it does, I'm going to support it. And if it's harmful, I'm going to be one of the people fighting it.
So was it bittersweet at all with your victory coming the same night that nationally your party really took a shellacking, more or less? I mean, you will be in the minority in the House and the Senate, lost the White House. It was not a great night for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really look at a lot of this stuff through the lens of partisanship and what's good for Democrats and what's good for Republicans and so forth. The way I look at it is our voters in our district sent me here to do work to bring back jobs and start making things in America again, to secure the border. And voters across the country sent a Republican House, and they sent President Trump back to Washington. And so what that means for me is not, you know, whether it's good or bad, it's what it is. And we need to be able to work across the aisle and try to find common ground where we can. It also means I'm going to be in a position where I need to fight back against things that the incoming administration would do that would be harmful to upstate New York.
And what are your expectations for what those are?
Well, it depends. We'll see. One of the things that's being negotiated now, as you know, is a tax bill. If that tax bill comes back and it lifts the salt cap and it includes tax cuts for the middle class, including things that the incoming president talked about on the campaign trail, cutting taxes for seniors who are dependent on Social Security, I think they do deserve a tax cut. He talked about cutting the tax on tips. I think that would be a really great tax cut for the middle class. Those sorts of things I would support. But if what they want to do is come in and do what they've done in the past, which is just give a bunch of tax cuts to billionaires and big corporations that are shipping jobs overseas, that doesn't help upstate New Yorkers. It helps the donor class.
So let me ask you this. You know, as we speak, you do not have your committee assignments yet. What are you hoping for?
Yeah, so I'm approaching this question just like the way I approach every bill and every decision here, which is what's going to be best for upstate New York. And so for me, I've asked to be on two committees. One is agriculture. We have a ton of small family farmers across the district who have just been getting screwed over the last 20, 30 years because these big ag monopolies come in with their corporate PACs and their armies of lobbyists. And they buy up a bunch of politicians, and they then turn around and write legislation that squeezes our small family farmers and helps the big ag monopolies just get more power. All of that's got to change. It's a big part of the reason why I don't take corporate PAC money, and I'm going to ask for a seat at the table as we do the farm bill so that our small family farms have a voice for once. I also asked to be on the Science and Technology Committee. We have some incredible investments under the CHIPS and Science Act that are coming home, and we have to make sure that we're creating good manufacturing jobs in America again and in upstate New York again instead of depending on China. So that committee does a lot of bipartisan work on that front, and something I'd be eager to be part of.
The farm bill was actually a failure of the last Congress. So there was not a full farm bill agreed to before the end of the term. Do you think that will be different this time?
Boy, I sure hope so. And I'm going to work like hell to make sure we get a farm bill done. And not just a farm bill, but a farm bill that actually works for small family farms, actually works for families to bring down grocery costs. I mean, it's one of the most corrupt things in our government over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, the way food policy and agricultural policy has been done in this country. We have these massive, massive farm conglomerates that are gobbling each other up and just absolutely destroying our small family farms. And as they get more and more powerful, they become more and more profitable. And as they become more and more profitable, they just funnel money into the pockets of these politicians who then continue this vicious cycle. So it's absolutely got to change. It's a question about fixing our campaign finance system, fixing our agriculture policy in this country, and being able to do a farm bill would be a huge opportunity to do that.
Now, you said you're also interested in being on Science and Technology and mentioned the CHIPS Act. The House Speaker, Mike Johnson, was in upstate New York during the end of the campaign, and he had to walk back the way he answered a question about the future of the CHIPS Act, saying before he walked it back that Republicans might be interested in scrapping it. So are you confident that whether you're on that committee or not, as it works out, that the CHIPS Act is the law of the land and here to stay?
Yeah, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make sure that's the case. Between the chip fab that's coming in Clay, New York, which is just north of our district, and the chip fab that's coming in Poughkeepsie, which is just south of the district, those are huge opportunities to improve American national security by making chips here in America instead of depending on foreign supply chains. And as importantly, it's an opportunity to rebuild the middle class. I mean, these are really, really good jobs building these chip fabs and working in these chip fabs. And so it's a top priority of mine to make sure that those investments continue and that they're not cut.
I have 1 minute for a couple housekeeping
sure.
things. How did you sure. do in the office lottery?
I actually did pretty well. There's about 63 of us in my freshman class. I got to pick seventh. So I'm happy with an office that has a window that looks out onto a construction site, including
progress.
It's great though for me because my 4-year-old loves coming and looking at the construction vehicles. So we landed right where we were supposed to. I also told folks, and probably should not have said this, but I would have been happy, you know, in a windowless basement office at this point. I'm just here to do the work and just really honored to be here.
Now, do you have a plan for any sort of regular schedule of town halls back in the district or appearances, or how will you handle that part of your job?
Yeah, well, we're working on that. I want to be in D.C. as little as possible and home in the district as much as possible. I would expect to have, you know, as soon as I can get home from votes to be able to do that and keep a really busy schedule with folks across the district.
Will you go to President-elect Trump's inauguration?
Yeah, I am planning to attend the inauguration. I'm looking forward to it. My office has an allotment of tickets, so any of your listeners who would be interested in attending as well should call my office to request those. I've been reaching out to folks across our district to invite folks to attend. I think it's a really important event, obviously, and I'm looking forward to attending it.
Let's talk about one of the early votes. So about 48 Democrats did vote for one of the early bills, which was named for Lake and Riley, and that is going to require the detention of migrants who commit what, you know, are relatively minor crimes, like shoplifting, that kind of thing. And how come you voted for it?
Well, I did what I said I was going to do during the campaign. I had so many voters talk to me and now constituents talk to me about their concerns with a completely broken immigration system where both Democrats and Republicans have just completely failed on this issue. And so I'm looking for proposals that are both tough and fair. If they're tough and they're fair, I'm going to support them. If they're not, then I won't. I think this bill was tough and it was fair. It's not going to solve every problem with our immigration system. There's a huge amount of work that needs to be done on this, but it's a step in the right direction. I think more broadly speaking, I really hope that Congress is able to turn its attention to sending more agents and more technology to the border. I think that's the first thing that needs to happen to solve this issue. But in terms of the bill that we voted on, what was that, earlier this week, it's a step in the right direction. It's bipartisan, and I think it was the right thing to do.
Critics have said that it overreaches by requiring immediate detention, and some advocates have said that, you know, that will begin a mechanism to kind of strip away due process from people who are arrested. What do you say to that line of criticism?
Look, I respect people on both sides of this bill. I think reasonable people can disagree with it. I don't share those concerns because the bill does provide for due process. It does provide for a hearing. What we're talking about here are folks, it only applies, I think it's really important for folks to understand, it only applies to people who are already in the country illegally. So if you're in the country lawfully, this bill would not apply to you. And then it only applies further to folks who have been arrested for or convicted of things like burglary, various theft charges. And basically what it says is, well, we're pending the results of your case, you're detained for that period. And so those people can't go back out onto the streets to commit other crimes in the interim.
And that is Congressman Josh Riley of New York's 19th District in our listening area, speaking to WAMC's Ian Pickus yesterday. And thanks to him and the New York Public News Network for that audio. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government for our regular Friday chat. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjayville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Sonia Hedlund. This week on Ballads and Banjos, I will play music that President Jimmy Carter loved. He really was a great fan of rock and roll music. I'll also play songs about his promotion of civil rights and world peace. That's this week on Ballads and Banjos, Saturday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, every Friday, we're joined by the Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, Mr. Dan Houston. He's here. He wasn't here at the top of the show. Sorry, you had to take a little backseat to Congressman Riley there for a few minutes.
Not a problem. It was good to listen to him.
And so. Also, you heard that there's a tribute continuing to President Jimmy Carter. Of course, there was that state funeral yesterday. That meant that the legislature was closed for the National Day of Mourning. And those meetings will begin again next Thursday.
Yes. Legislative meetings would have happened yesterday, but the entire county government was closed for the Day of Mourning. So the meetings that were going to happen, I think it was planning. There were two others there. I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but those have been canceled for this month. They will resume next month. January is a quieter month anyway. So there's not going to be a rescheduling of the January meetings that were canceled from yesterday. We will just proceed into what would normally be the second Thursday of the month committee meetings coming up this Thursday. Of course, that will be the third Thursday of the month because we shifted everything forward because of the New Year's Day holiday impacting all of that. So things are a little bit wonky, but we will continue to record them. So if you are unable to make it in person or miss the meetings, whatever, they are available online. And then at the full board meeting, which is the following Thursday, they will hopefully set the meeting schedule for the rest of the year, because February onward, we don't actually have official meetings set yet. And that's standard procedure. Every January, the legislature figures out, do we like the committees meeting in the order they're meeting, on the days they're meeting? I anticipate there's not going to be any major changes, but there probably will be a few here and there, and I'll let you know about them when I'm back here.
All right. And things are continuing to bubble along. Not everything, shuts down or closes. It's just because the legislature doesn't meet. The airport construction at the Sullivan County International Airport is continuing on track. What's the update there?
Yeah. You can see every month I post a time-lapse video of the past 30 days of work. They have a camera at the construction site, so you can see what's going on. Just posted the one for December. Mostly what you're seeing there is a buttoning up of the building. The roof is finished. There's some insulation on the side. The cladding hasn't been put on yet, but it's mainly to get it all enclosed so the workers are not dealing with constant freezing temperatures, especially like we've had this week. You know how windy it's been? Mm-hmm. You should go up to the airport sometime and see in that bare space, since we don't want trees right around the runway, the wind comes whipping down the plane there. So, hey, there's a pun in that. But anyway.
Maybe a song in it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So are you going to look up how that song came to be?
Not when you know it by heart, Dan. Right.
So anyway, they're working now inside to get the furniture and fixtures finished. There we go. That's hard to say.
All the fixings.
It's a 15,000 square foot facility. It is full of sustainable initiatives, including glued, laminated timber instead of steel that we used, high energy efficiency glass, photovoltaic array, electric vehicle charging station. We've recycled some of the steel and bluestone that was used in the old terminal when it was demolished. We preserved that. We also recycled a little over 80 tons of material from the terminal in our transfer station rather than landfilling it. And I think we are on track to have the facility basically finished in May. I don't know that it'll open per se then. It might be June or July. And I think if my understanding is correct, the governor or the lieutenant governor will be coming down to actually open the facility, because it's that significant and spectacular. It's going to be beautiful.
Well, there's also a big state grant behind it too.
So yes, there is.
So they might want to show off what they did.
$18.5 million they gave us to put this together. So.
And again, we need to remind folks, this is not for passenger travel, regular passenger travel like at Stewart or one of the mm-hmm. other regional airports. This is meant for attracting other commercial jets and transportation.
The business aviation community.
Business aviation.
Because, yeah, it, if you looked at the other airports of similar size and capacity, like Teterboro or Westchester or some of those others that cater to the business aviation community, they're out of room and their prices reflect that. You pay a high premium being that close to New York City. And we've got the same kind of facility. We have got a lot more room, though, and lower prices because of where we're situated. And the whole goal here is to make it a facility that is at least revenue neutral, that we're paying as much as we're bringing in, if not to actually be bringing in more. Not that we're in the business of making a profit, but bringing in more so that we can fund future improvements at the airport without asking taxpayers to help us with that. That was the original dream when this thing was opened in 1969, but it's never paid for itself. Well, this is the idea, to get it to pay for itself. Some people say, well, why not just get rid of it? We would actually have to give back all the federal grants that we got over the decades if we abandoned the airport. So that's not an option. And hey, let's look ahead, look up, and move forward.
And the Emergency Services Youth Academy returning in July. You've already got sign-ups starting. It's hard to believe we're talking about summer already, but I would like to talk about summer.
Yeah, why not?
At this point. But that's that academy for students, youth, to get involved in these emergency services jobs that where they can get training.
Mm-hmm. We had our first version of it last July, where we had seven teenagers between the ages of 14 and 16 years old who came to our Emergency Operations Center, which coincidentally is near the airport in Swan Lake. And they got to see, and I did too, I was fascinated by this, all sorts of different ways that emergency responders undertake their jobs. We're talking about firefighters. We're talking about ambulance workers. We're talking about those helicopters for the state police and medical needs. They got to see our sheriff's office and how they use what they use to respond to emergencies. They were out of their minds with interest and delight in this. So were us adults, actually, because this was really cool. I'm looking forward to this as much as anybody. It will be happening this year, July 21st through the 25th. Again, 14 to 16 years old. They will learn over the course of a week about all the different emergency services, both volunteer and paid, that are available not only in Sullivan County, but around the country and the world. Helicopters, ambulances, drones, tactical law enforcement vehicles. We have a fire training tower where they can train to fight fires. JAWS, Jenga, CPR, search and rescue, bomb disposal, canine units. It's really cool. It's really interesting. If you have somebody who's interested, give a call to our public safety department. That's 807-0509. That's 845-807-0509. We're looking to sign people up for it, and there is no cost.
What's the age range again?
14 to 16.
All right. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Dan Hoost, who joins us every Friday to talk about what's going on with Sullivan County government. I never really take issue with anything you want to talk about, but the one bullet point that you're mentioning here, I just have to ask, are you bananas? Shake off the winter blues by planning a group picnic at five different spots in county parks. Dan, it's 23 degrees.
Parks had this great idea. They were like, let's talk about it now when people are actually thinking, I would love to do an outdoor picnic if the weather was just warmer. Because there are people. Hey, let's turn our minds towards that. Spending a nice warm day at one of our parks. It's just fun to think about. Come on. The parks that we have, several of them have picnic pavilions. In fact, like Lake Superior has three different pavilions. They have a beach pavilion, a field pavilion, which gives you a little more room, and a dam area pavilion. That is not me swearing on the radio. That is, there's actually a dam at the end of Lake Superior, and there's a picnic pavilion there. They each have their own ambiance. We also have a pavilion at our Livingston Manor Covered Bridge Park, and a pavilion in that is shaded, actually, at our Minisink Battleground Park in Berryville. Each include 10 picnic tables, a group cooking grill, and access to restrooms. And they are wonderful spots to have just a family picnic. You do not have to have anything more than 25 people that are available for this. And I know some of you like 25 people. Trust me, you know 25 people that could get together and have a great party at one of these pavilions. They are available starting with at a $50 rental fee and going up for there, depending on how many people you have.
All right. So maybe if you're planning ahead for your family reunion or something in the spring or summer.
Yeah, it's fun to plan for these things, isn't it? And listen, if you want a specific day, be the early bird.
Right. Or if you know just like the cold weather, you could go and have a picnic.
We are not renting them now. If you have it, you probably could do it for free, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend it because I think those restrooms might not be working this time of year. They tend to be the porta potty. Yeah, they're not winterized. So give a call to our Parks Department, 807-0287.
But you know what is winterized? The O&W Rail Trail, because you've got your Snow NW event that's going on. So that is the wintertime activity to get out and enjoy on the O&W.
Yeah, we just posted a list of 2025 events that our Sullivan O&W Rail Trail folks are putting together. And O&W stands for Ontario and Western. It used to be a major railroad that ran all through Sullivan County. Most of our communities in the central and northern parts of the county were served by it. We have events all year long, including in the winter, where we do a snowshoe and walk. In years past, we haven't necessarily needed the snowshoes. This year we may. That's going to be Saturday, February 22nd at the Parksville Rail Trail, which goes by some beautiful waterfalls, has a lovely bridge, and some of it is hard-packed. Other parts are paved, but since it'll probably have snow on it, bring your snowshoes or snow boots. And then we have other events listed on our website and on our social media, a multi-day walking adventure in Wurtsboro in June. Our Bow Wow NW Summer Dog Walk in August in South Fallsburg, and our Howl, H-O-N-W-L, Haunted History Hike in October in Hurleyville. And we are expanding our rail trails as well. Hopefully a few months from now, we'll be able to start talking about the construction of a bridge, a pedestrian and bicycling bridge over the Neversink River between Woodridge and South Fallsburg, which I think will become our mini version of Walkway Over the Hudson.
And while we're talking about the outdoor winter weather, it is getting a little warmer this weekend, but temperatures going back into the teens at night Tuesday through, it looks like, the end of the week. So a good reminder again that those warming centers in the county are open.
Are open 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. every night, holidays included. There will not be a night that we aren't open between now and at least mid-April. Liberty United Methodist Church on Main Street in Liberty and the St. John Street Episcopal Church on St. John Street in Monticello. However, if you need help beyond that, if your heat might be out for many days, and listen, the daytime is cold as well. Sure, our routine thing is, you know, go out to Walmart or the government center, but that sounds a little uncaring on that. We want to help you get some temporary shelter where you need it. Our social services department can help you with that. 292-0100. They are eager to help with temporary assistance and whatever they can do. Or if it's something where you really need to get out right away and it may be over the weekend, so calling 0100, you may not reach anyone, call your non-emergency line of your local police department or our sheriff's office, which is 794-7100. They can reach somebody who's on call that can help you immediately on a Saturday or a Sunday. We do not want to leave anyone out in the cold, day or night. There are options for you.
And before we go, mentioning, it looks like you've been channeling your inner Scorsese. There is a new welcome video on the county website.
Not me. It's actually Chris Ramirez, who is a very talented photographer and videographer. He uses drones a lot, too, from Summitville. He's a firefighter down there. Used to work for the New York Times as a photographer. And we have been running some of his drone and ground-based videography on our website in years past. But now if you go to SullivanNY.gov, you're going to see an updated list of videos from around Sullivan County showcasing some of our most beautiful sites at the most beautiful time of day, the most beautiful time of year. It is breathtaking just to go on SullivanNY.gov and watch that video roll through. It'll take only a couple minutes of your time. I'd encourage you, and by the way, while I'm mentioning it, it is now sullivanny.gov.gov. sullivanny.us will continue to work for the rest of this year, but we've been mandated by the federal government, since we're a government, to go to .gov. We can't use .us anymore. So update your web browser bookmarks, and also if you have any email addresses for county officials in your email address database, make sure that you update those from sullivanny.us to sullivanny.gov.
while we're talking about reminders, a good reminder to that Real ID, you need to get that by May. Is that right?
May is when that's changing. You're going to need at least an enhanced ID, if not a Real ID or a passport, to fly even domestically after May. That is a federal government issued requirement, but you can get those IDs at our DMV right here in Monticello. Beat the rush. Do it now, because when we get to May, I bet you we're going to have a lot of people trying to get it at the last minute. Don't be one of those.
And even though offices were closed yesterday, you're back to normal today.
Yep, back to normal today and all of next week.
And before I let you go, I have to comment on your snazzy shirt. You're wearing the official Sullivan County Catskills shirt with your name embossed on the front there.
Isn't that fun?
I don't think I've seen you with the official swag of the county.
Sometimes people make fun of me with that, but I'm very proud of it. I'm proud to work for the county. I'm proud to represent the county. This is a shirt I have had for many years, and it was just a chance to wear it today, and you got to see it.
I got to see it. Well, mm-hmm. Maybe others will see it when they see you out and about. Is there a further extension of this collection?
No, the rest of it. I do have shirts made by my mother. She is a very talented seamstress, and I bet she could do this kind of thing where she embroiders my name on it, but then that would feel very narcissistic to me. This one is more just like, I work for Sullivan County, how could I help you? That one would be like, I'm Dan Hoost, and my mama made this for me.
I want that one.
Yeah, no.
Dan, who's Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Thank you, and have a good weekend. We'll see you next Friday.
You too.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Pennsylvania Farm Show, the largest indoor agricultural exposition under one roof in the United States. We'll learn more about local representation from Wayne County after this break. This is Radio Chatsko.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we've got Davina Allen, founder of one of the great culinary schools of the world and a beloved ambassador of Irish cooking. At Ballymaloe, she's trained some of the most lauded chefs and cooks across two generations, and she's got a lifetime of stories. We spend the hour with her coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Donna Fellenberg here on Catskill Character. This week, my guest is Judith Maidenbaum. For 18 years, the owner of the Fat Lady Cafe, which was located on Conneaugh Lake in Bethel, New York. Where did she come from? How did she get here and become a restaurant owner knowing nothing about running a restaurant? Tune in Saturday to Catskill Character at 10:30. We'll answer those questions and more on Radio Catskill.
Matt Wilson spent years doing rounds at children's hospitals in New York City.
I had a clip-on tie. I wore Heelys, size 11.
Matt was a medical clown.
The role of a medical clown is to reintroduce the sense of play and joy and hope and light into a space that doesn't normally inhabit.
Ideas about navigating uncertainty. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Cassie of Rare Pair Radio. It's a weekly showcase of primarily female artists, but also a wide range of avant-garde musicians, the fruit of post-punk, experimental, and fringe music.
Your eyes are set on stone. I love to see you shine, because you really blow my mind.
Rare Pair Radio, Friday at 8 p.m.
Your heart beats like a drum.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, every January, Pennsylvania hosts the largest indoor agricultural exposition under one roof in the nation, showcasing the quality and breadth of the Pennsylvania agricultural industry and the people who make it thrive. Some of those folks that make it thrive are right here in our area. The State Farm Show is the culmination of months of competitions, and Wayne County residents are always represented in the livestock and other categories, often bringing home top prizes in their divisions. Chelsea Hill is with the Penn State Extension in Honesdale, and she's here to tell us more. Chelsea, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. And how are folks doing with the farm show, which is underway already?
Oh, my gosh. It's been quite a crazy week. I actually went down for the second time yesterday to check in with some more of our exhibitors, and We have had a fantastic week, let me tell you. I am really super proud of all of our exhibitors from our county this year. They've really put their best foot forward.
That's great. How many Wayne County entries were there in this year's farm show?
Well, I have a count currently as of yesterday. We had 55 entries that placed. So that means that there was probably another 10 or so that were exhibited but did not place in the top three or four. That's a phenomenal number from a county that's a little bit farther away than most others that participate.
Farther away meaning that more?
Farther away as in distance.
Oh, I see.
We kind of joke, if you're above 80, you're kind of invisible to a lot of folks down there. So.
Well, because you're talking about this is down in Harrisburg?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a trip down there. But, you know, folks in Wayne County are always represented, as we've said. What are some of the more popular areas or departments for entries from folks in Wayne County?
So from our livestock perspective, our 4-H and some of our FFA kids do exhibit down there just about every year. So as long as I've been in an extension in my position, we've had kids that participate in the junior market show. But we also had some additions this year. We had a couple of open entries in beef. We also had quite a few individuals who do the non-livestock projects, what I call, so it'd be Department 24 or Family Living. We had quite a few people in open as well who did maple, beekeeping, and vegetables. And those are kind of our regulars, but each one of them did very well this year. I'm just really kind of flabbergasted, to be honest with you.
That's great, though. It shows the enthusiasm there and the depth of the bench, if you will, in the ag community. What are some of the perennial categories where folks from Wayne County agricultural enterprises, you know, do really well or earn a blue ribbon?
So we normally have really top scores in our maple producers as well as our beekeepers entries. These are folks that, again, they work on their products, you know, year round. It's not something that you do once and you're done with it. It's an art. It's something that they're really passionate about. So we had a couple of folks who did, you know, first, second place in some of those divisions this year. We also have an individual who does veggies usually every year. And I mentioned, you know, some of our Department 24 entries. We have three of our 4-H clubs who entered in scrapbooks this year. Usually we only have one club that exhibits, so I was super excited to see that. And then we, like I said, have many junior market entries, but this year, I think last year I only had six or seven. This year I had 15. So we really are starting to get a bigger presence down there.
And so just talk a little bit about the process of this. I mean, this is the culmination of a lot of things, but it starts at the local level. What if I was, you know, maybe doing the beekeeping thing, what would that look like? And how long does that take in order to get presence and placing at the PA Farm Show, hopefully?
So the one exhibitor that did really well this year, you know, she takes off her honey, I believe, in the spring as well as the fall, if everything goes well. You know, just to make sure that there's enough left over for the bees in order to survive. But what really excites me about beekeeping, and for this exhibitor in particular, is that to be able to carry over bees in the wintertime has been such a struggle for many producers, that for her to be able to, you know, be able to pull off product and keep hives all year round is quite phenomenal. And when you talk to her, she's so passionate about it. So those are, you know, she entered in different categories based on the color, and when the honey is extracted, what the bees were pollinating determines color, and some other factors in there as well. So I believe she put in, let's see here, four different products. Yeah, four different types of honey, and each one of them placed in the top three for their division. So, you know, that's exceptional.
That's exceptional, yeah.
And for different colors too. So like I said, it really depends on what the bees are working on that determines that. So if you're pulling off at different points in time, you could get something earlier on that's darker or lighter, depending on what, you know, they're pollinating. So, and I'm not an expert in beekeeping. So if I'm saying something wrong, I apologize, but it's something I'm learning about, and it's really interesting.
Well, I mean, kudos to her too. I mean, it's what the bees give her for her entry, but also just like the dedication and the commitment to all of this. And then you're placing statewide. I mean, a reminder again, this is the entire Keystone State. So an amazing achievement there. Are there any new ag operations getting attention at the farm show level?
So I didn't see anybody new as far as like they've never been to farm show before other than a couple of my junior market entries. But I will tell you that for the first time, we did have a grand champion junior market division placer. We had our grand champion market heifer by one of our 4-H exhibitors, Haley Wasman. So I'm going to give a call out to her because she has worked her tail off with this particular animal. So if you're not familiar with the market steer or market heifer project, these animals are 18 to 24 months old. So that's, you know, over a year of commitment for a member to put into an animal like this. And I can tell you that this kid, she is up early in the morning, before school and after school, and every time in between to get into that barn and take care of these animals. So
congrats to her.
I'm super proud of her and all the other kids too, not to take away from them either. It's really amazing to see how far they've come. Quite a few of them, you know, I've been here for a few years now, so it's amazing to me how quickly they grow and how they learn and how much better they're doing every single year. So our program is working and it's flourishing and it's fantastic to see.
Where is Haley Farm in Wayne County?
So Haley is from Lake Ariel.
Well, shout out to Lake Ariel folks out there too. And Haley, congratulations to that. And again, this is just, it's more than like a county fair that you might see in the summer. This is a really big deal in the agricultural communities, not only Wayne County, but statewide. And as I mentioned, the largest indoor exposition under one roof in the nation. Talk a little bit about that and how it has such meaning for the agricultural community locally.
So this is such a fantastic opportunity, not only for ag producers to exhibit their best products or their best, you know, livestock expositions or dairy or other animals, but it's a chance for them to meet the public and to educate them on how important the agricultural industry as a whole is. You know, and this is also a platform for many of those commodity groups to showcase, you know, the many different products that they have. So, for example, you know, in the food court, most of those stands are commodity groups that are from across the state. So, you could pick any of them, but I'll pick like the mushroom producers group. Those are from different parts of the state. They come together for 1 year to put on this food court option for, you know, folks to take advantage of, and it promotes their products. So if you weren't aware, mushrooms are we're the number one producer in the nation. So it's pretty important for us to highlight that and to keep supporting that industry, because remember, if we don't support our farmers, they can't thrive. And if they can't thrive, they in turn can't produce our products. And then we have to outsource. And, you know, economically speaking, without that, you're going to be paying more for your groceries and you're going to lose that community. And that's what is so important about Farm Show, is tying that all together in so many different ways. I mean, through the educational exhibits and, you know, the Ag Explorers, which is a really fun, you know, like a search for young kids. They get a little piece of paper, and all across Farm Show, there are different booths for them to get stamps. And they're educational. So like for the dairy goats, they have a little goat activity that they do. And by the end of it, they can go and put their card in to win a prize at the end of it. So they make it fun. They make it interesting and engaging so that people know where their food comes from. And so that it, in turn, makes it very enjoyable, but also really meaningful to everybody that attends.
Yeah. Well, it's just so great. I mean, you know, we're talking about the Pennsylvania Farm Show, but I know that everybody here in the Upper Delaware Valley and whoever's listening is so proud of all those folks that are just not only, you know, doing this, but helping the agricultural community thrive in the area. And everybody's really proud. So if folks want to learn more about the PA Farm Show, visit farmshow.pa.gov. And to learn more about agriculture in Wayne County, you can visit extension.psu.edu/Wayne-Farm County. We've been speaking to Chelsea Hill from the Penn State Extension in Honesdale. Chelsea, thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of the farm show. Safe travels down to Harrisburg.
Thanks so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. We'll take a break, and when we come back, celebrating Lego. Local Lego lovers are convening tomorrow. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Tim Buckley was one of the great American songwriters. Next time on The Wagalo the Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll hear covers of Tim Buckley songs from British and Irish singers and bands. So join me, please, for British and Irish focused covers of songs by the great Tim Buckley. Next Sunday afternoon at 3, immediately after Folk Plus. Just like the birds and flies.
This week on Selected Shorts, hands at 10 and 2, check your rearview mirror, and watch for the past creeping up behind you. Join me, Meg Wolitzer, for some Driver's Ed.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, Legos, those ubiquitous plastic bricks, are being celebrated tomorrow with a community-wide celebration of Legos at Sullivan Public in Eldred, New York. Adrian Herdersky is the head of children's programs at Sullivan Public, and she joins us now to tell us more. Hi.
Hi. Glad to be here. Thank you.
And you brought some Legos with you, too. I'm looking at, like, is this a fire-breathing dragon Lego?
Yeah, so I brought with me a Ninjago dragon. This dragon will be set up at the show tomorrow. This one is actually eager to get his hands on some threads and some sewing equipment. So when you come tomorrow, you'll see him set up with some of the other mediums that we have in the studio at Sullivan Public.
Tell us about this Lego show and how it came about. Are you a big Lego fan?
I am. So my Lego love really stems from my dad. He is the Lego master of our family. And as long as I can remember, he's been a Lego collector. He does a lot of free builds himself. He hasn't quite been on Lego Masters before, but he's like that level of Lego lover for sure. So,
what's a free build for those of us who are not into the Lego lingo?
Yeah, so often you'll see sets for sale on the shelf that have instructions and certain bricks already picked out, ready to go. Free build is where you're just taking loose bricks and you're making your own. So, for example, tomorrow you'll see a free build haunted house. So that's not something that there's a set for, and this thing is massive. So we've got trap doors, we've got all kinds of figures that you're going to see in there. So the free builds are a chance for people to kind of explore on their own what they want to create.
So tomorrow, this is the culmination of your Lego club at Sullivan Public.
It is.
Tell us a little bit more about the club and what folks can expect to see tomorrow.
Absolutely. So the club is students who do a mix of sets and free builds. We also do challenges, and those students are going to be putting those sets on display. So we've got tables set up. We've got our youth community members that are putting in displays. We've got some older community members that are also going to be putting in displays. So you're going to see builds that represent students from all across the county.
Okay, and so will folks be able to also do some of their own builds or participate a little bit or play around?
Yeah, so tomorrow we do have some hands-on activities, some involving Lego, and some also we've got the local science club that's going to be doing some science demonstrations. We've also got a Lego photo booth. We've got some magazines set up for the kids to kind of peruse and look through, and then we've got many, many creations that kids will be able to really take some time and to look for. We've also got a scavenger hunt that we're setting up as well. So kids, when they come in, they'll have a couple special things that they can look for as they explore the builds.
And, you know, I mentioned that you brought a Lego dragon here, but now I'm just realizing as I look at you, you're wearing a Lego sweatshirt. You've got Lego earrings.
Yeah.
You're a Lego enthusiast, as is your family. You mentioned your dad.
Yes.
When you started this club, were you surprised about the number of Lego enthusiasts in the area?
Yes and no. Lego is very popular, and it always has been amongst youth, but also amongst adults. So the conversations that I've been having with kids about Lego over the years have been amazing to hear about their incredible builds and the things that they're working on. But it's also been amazing to hear from adults who have grown children who did Lego and who have careers in landscape architecture and engineering and all of these amazing things that parents attribute, you know, Lego Lego was the start of that, and now their child has launched into this amazing career. So it's been an incredible journey just sharing my love with the kids. And also I could go on and on about the benefits of Lego, the social emotional benefits, the fine motor skills, the sequencing. It's really just fun, and it's got all of these layers of things that are great for child development and for community. I mean, this event is attracting people from across the county, young, old, and alike. You know, bring your dog.
What is it about the Legos, do you think, that just spans these generations and continues to keep going? I mean, it's been around for a little while, but it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and people keep coming to it and keep playing with it.
Yeah, you know, I think it really boils down to individual expression. Lego is a way that people can build sets that are about the things that they're passionate about, their interests. You know, you're going to see Harry Potter sets. You're going to see Minecraft sets. You're going to see all kinds of things that, you know, you might recognize. But then you've got all of these amazing free builds that, you know, unless you ask what's going on there to a child, you really don't know the depth of what is really going on inside that build until you ask. So I think it really boils down to imagination and creativity. And a lot of times kids, they have that uninhibited creativity, but as adults, you lose that a little bit. And Lego, I think, is a way to regain that. And even if you're not a builder, come out and see these builds, because there is something for everybody and it's impressive. Whether you're a builder yourself, you're going to be impressed by what you see.
So you brought a few other Legos there. What else did you bring for me here? I'm not a builder, so maybe I can learn a little bit out of this.
So here we've got a Jurassic Park. This is a cage.
Oh, wow. This is like a cage. Yeah, that you've seen in the movie. It like moves with the grate there. And then, oh, you've got a dinosaur to go into the grate.
Yeah,
T-Rex. Ooh, I dropped it.
We've also got a mix of, the famous sound of the brick.
Yes, yeah.
You heard it there.
The crash. Yeah. But, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have all of these fancy, things like this. It was really just the bricks. And, it's definitely developed over the years. I don't even remember if we had kits. I just remember like bags of bricks, and we were always losing them, and our mom was getting mad at us for stepping on them. But, I do remember the creativity and the things you could do with the color and the different types of ways to make and build. What do you think about this progression of it into all these different areas?
Well, I think it's so interesting because recently I got into learning about a little bit of history of Lego, specifically Fabuland, which is Lego from the 70s, and how different the Fabuland Lego looks and sort of the evolution of Lego. So now we're familiar with Lego Friends, but the predecessor to Lego Friends is actually something called Lego Belleville, which we're going to have examples of at the Lego show tomorrow. So there's actually going to be a little bit of a history twist, so that way folks can see that Lego, just as the world changes and develops, Lego does too, and it meets the needs and the interests, I think, of the community while still giving that sort of open free build. You can go to Lego, you can pick the bricks off the wall, and then you can build whatever it is in your imagination.
All right, the Lego show is tomorrow at Sullivan Public, which is 16 Proctor Road behind the library in Eldred, New York. It's from 11 to 3.
Yes.
And is it a free event or?
Yes, this event is free, and we're so thankful to the Sullivan County Youth Bureau for making this programming accessible to our community. So like I said, these builds represent students from all across the county. I mean, the reach is wide, and we couldn't be more thankful to offer events like this for free, free science demonstrations, free raffle, free photo booth. This is come out and have a good day, be with your community, support the kids, and support the local businesses that are a part of it.
And pick up some of your enthusiasm that you're generating here. I can see it, and you can hopefully hear it and feel it if you're listening. Adrian Herdersky, also known as Miss Adrian, is the head of children's programs at Sullivan Public, and she'll be there along with other enthusiasts community-wide celebrating Lego at the Lego Show at Sullivan Public. More information at sullivanpublic.com. Fun fact I looked up, laid end to end, the number of Lego bricks sold in a year would reach more than 5 times around the world.
Can't say amazing. I'm surprised. Listen, if you come to my house, I'll get you halfway around the world.
Thank you so much. Have a great show. Have a great weekend. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can find this show and other local programming on our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Heaven is the life. WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's temperature warmer than yesterday, high of 28, some clouds moving in the afternoon. Clouds tonight with late night snow showers possible, a low of 19. And for the weekend, flurries, snow showers possible Saturday, high 25, and for Sunday, a high 32.